morning. Wake you up. I hope you're awake. It's 11 o'clock. It is Friday. Leap year, February 29th, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11:02, something like that. Anyway, good morning. This is Dr. Michelle with you, your relationship expert. And welcome to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, once again, as we do every Friday at 11 in the morning. And Saturday at 11 in the morning, we get on the couch together and we talk about stuff. And I pose myself here as a relationship expert, but we talk about everything. I have my listeners calling in and, you know, they tell me stuff going on. Let me clarify, first of all, before we get into it, that this is not a therapeutic relationship, guys, that you and I have. This is a, you know, advice show. We're talking, and I'm here just telling you what I think and giving you suggestions and stuff like that. So I need to get that out of the way, first of all. So what do we talk about? Anything, everything. If you're having self-esteem issues, if you're feeling anxious, if you're stressed out, if you're having a problem with your partner, no matter who they are, let me know about it, and we'll talk about it. Of course, I have the number for you, 818-602-4498. And today, what we're talking about, and of course, we can switch it up. We can move it around. We're talking about couples in therapy. You know, how to help couples in therapy. What are some of the most common things that couples argue about? And throughout my 12 or so years of helping people, I found some really common issues that a lot of couples fight about. We'll be talking about that coming up. So if I tell you some things, hopefully you'll go, oh, yeah, that's what we argue about all the time. Dang, you know what? I'm not that crazy. And maybe it'll let you take a look at your partner and say, wow, maybe they have a valid point or whatever. Let me just mention to you, coming up also, we're going to get a special guest host today. He's a colleague of mine. And his name is Dr. Alan Comeau. He is not only a relationship expert, he has done so much. And I'll tell you more about that when we introduce him and bring him on the air here. But he's a psychologist here in Los Angeles. He's a UCLA Medical School clinical faculty member. He's a newspaper columnist. He's a media heavy, that's what I call him. He's also a singer-songwriter, multi-talented kind of guy. He's got a great CD out, as a matter of fact. But anyway, we'll talk about that as well. But the thing we're talking about today is relationships and things that couples argue about. What are some of the most common things? Come on, quick. What do you think? Money. Of course. We all argue about money. Always. What else? Sex. Of course we argue about it. I don't know if we argue about it. Sometimes we're a little too closed-mouthed about it, and we hold in resentment. We don't get it out there as to what we need and what we want. So that's another thing. What else do we argue about? We argue about not spending enough time together. Work. Whether it be the man, who's the breadwinner, the woman, both. She's working two jobs. She's taking care of the kids and the family. She's working a full-time job. And or he's working a full-time gig or taking care of the kids, whatever. We're all sharing. We all have busy lives, don't we? And so that's a biggie as well. When are you coming home? When are you going to help me with the kids? Either. We all know that the women end up doing most of it, don't we? No? Sure we do. We just do it. That's what we're geared for. We start picking up things. Well, guys, okay, I'll be fair to you. You do that too sometimes. But, you know, if one partner feels they're putting in more effort around the house, it brings up notions that the other person doesn't respect the other one enough to help out. And you know what else it brings up? Which I found was the deeper issue? Power. Especially if the person who's making more money feels that they don't have to pitch in around the house as much. You know what I'm saying? Guys or girls, you know what I'm talking about. Well, I work 10 hours a day. I come home from the office and I'm not in the mood to do the laundry. Well, I work too. Okay, so I've beat that too much. But you get that. So what? Housework. So these are the common things. We've got housework here. We got money. They argue about. We argue about. And I'm not talking necessarily about married couples. I'm talking about any kind of partners. A gay partner relationship. Just living with someone. Almost going to commit to, kind of, sort of. Okay, so we got money, sex, work, time spent together, raising the children. What else? Oh, there's so many. And so much of it. Oh, housework. Talk about that, too. Also, after and during, possibly, my guest, Dr. Alan Comeau, visits us, we're going to talk about, is arguing really such a bad thing? You know, there are some things we have to, I don't necessarily like the word argue, like full out blasting each other and arguing. I don't know if I'm comfortable about that. But talk about at least, have a healthy, hearty discussion. That's what I'm talking about. Let's have a really healthy, hearty discussion about that. So, you know, I think there are certain things that people really need to kind of bring up. And, you know, there's going to be conflict. It's not always a bad thing. As a matter of fact, some experts believe that far from being a bad thing, arguing or having conflict is actually one of the healthiest things a couple can do. Now, I'm not talking about the abusive screaming and yelling. And like last week, we had some guy call in and say that he had a really bad relationship with a woman who used to throw things. She broke his pictures. He had some really expensive pictures. She broke the glass. She used to throw those things. These are like original prints. She used to throw pottery. She used to throw, all kinds of things. Vases. She was a dish thrower. The guy was ducking all the time. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about fighting like that. I'm talking about having a strong, healthy conflict, you know? So those are the kind of things that you know, things that we need possibly to argue about. You know, those are really important things. What else? You know what? The research shows from the Center of Marital and Family Studies at the University of Denver that couples who argue or have conflict, healthy-like, are more likely to be satisfied with their marriages than couples who withdraw from conflict. You know? So people who withdraw or keep it in, of course, we build it up and it gets worse. You know? So that's what we do. And sometimes, if we hold things in, it gets really, really, really bad. So that's what we can't do. Because we have resentment, of course. And you all know about that. When we hold things in, we get a resentment, and then we really get physically sick. You know? So that's what happens there. Okay. I'm just waiting for our guest to call in. Once again, we're hopefully going to hear from Alan Comeau. He's a doctor. He's a psychologist. And we're just trying to get the phones up here on the lines. But we're going to be talking about how to counsel couples and how to work it. How to work it out. Let me see if we got a phone coming up here. I think we have a ring. Let me try to answer this phone. Good morning. This is Dr. Michelle. Are you on the line with me? Not yet. We're going to try to pull up the line once again. All right. Okay, so we're talking about couples. We're talking about how to counsel couples, some of the healthiest things we can do to help people, and we're also talking about some of the most common problems that people have, some of the no-brainers that you know, you can learn, which are really easy, like how you're not going to talk to somebody with disrespect. Let's see if we got the line up. Hello. Good morning. Are you there?
I am here.
Hey. This is our expert psychologist, Dr. Alan Comeau. Good morning, Alan. How you doing?
Good morning, Dr. Michelle. I'm doing pretty good today. How are you?
Good. Well, good. Here we are.
We made it
thanks together.
Thanks to technology.
Yeah, you got that right. Let me introduce Alan, by the way. He's a psychologist here in Los Angeles. Licensed psychologist, a really good one, too. Been practicing for, over 25 years. But you're still a young guy. You're still a young guy.
Yes, in heart.
You know what I'm saying? And, of course, you're a UCLA Medical School clinical faculty member. That is incredible. So you're a professor.
I'm an assistant professor, but I still profess.
You're so modest. He's also a newspaper columnist and a singer-songwriter. Multi-talented man. Your CD is really good, by the way. Just want to say.
I'm very grateful to hear that.
The name of your CD is Life is in Session, right?
Yeah, Life is in Session.
That's really clever. You know that I've known that CD has been out, and I'm so slow. I was actually driving here this morning. I went, oh, I get it. life is in session, like a therapeutic session, because he's a psychologist, but also life's in session because we're in a music session. Wow. You're heavy.
It's like a triple entendre.
Well, it took me a while to get it, so that's where my brain's at. Anyway, we're talking about counseling couples in trouble, and Alan, you have written hundreds of articles for newspapers in California, in this state, and actually nationally. And we were talking about this particular article you wrote on counseling couples in trouble. So how many couples have you seen, possibly, throughout your years, for how many years?
Probably under 500, but many hundreds of couples have come. You know, I've seen lots of individuals, of course. You know, I always found myself sort of gravitating magnetically when couples come in the room. That really is an entirely different kind of conversation.
Wow. Yeah. So what is it? What's so different about it?
Well, for one, you know, you've got two people kind of talking with each other as well as talking with, you know, me with you, because
right.
I know you're a psychologist as well and a very good one.
And
you know, so what happens is the dynamics just begin to, you know, to evolve, because there's the individual relationship, of course, that the therapist has with each person, and then you find that there's this third entity in the room. There's this entity, the relationship, and I used to look in between the couple sometimes and imagine that there was this other body sitting there, you know, only as a point of reference, and so, you know, and having a conversation with that entity as well, and, you know, and so the couple is kind of like a miracle, just like it's written in the Bible and other places, you know, where the two come together, there's one, you know?
Right.
And they're in the room. So I find that really different from the individual. In individual counseling, of course, what you have is you have that sort of dialogue between two people.
Right.
Two of us, and it's about, you know, with the person in the room, and then, of course, the opportunities are very different there, because depth. But with couples, you get into the depth of the relationship itself and how it means to people. And you know something? You know, we all exist in relationship to one another.
Right.
So relationship counseling is a vital thing.
It sure is. It's really important to do. So,
yeah,
now, I know you've heard it all. You have some great stories. You and I have talked, you know, privately, and of course we have to keep client confidentiality. But,
yes,
you know, sometimes as professionals, we like to share stories and information and things like that. So what are some of the most interesting things that you've heard from couples that they argue about?
Well, you know, it's interesting that the impulses that bring us together, you know, don't always keep together. So, you know, so just to start with that, you know, that couples usually find each other, you know, from across the room because of some attraction, you know, when you become a couple and you commit to a relationship, that attraction has to bear the winds of change, because everyone's going to get old, frail. Some of us will get fat. Some of us will lose our weight. And we all take
some of us
differently. You know? And so attraction brings us together, but it doesn't always keep us together. Another area is like unmet emotional needs.
Right.
We all come to relationship sort of, you know, with the past. And, you know, unfortunately, in suffering, you know, want our spouse to save us, you know, and some, you know, and that's an example of one relationship that I counseled, that the one spouse wanted the other to save them, and also sometimes we want someone to serve us.
Right.
And that might work initially in a relationship, but it might not work throughout a relationship. I've got a few more, shall I say?
Sure.
Okay, so financial insecurity is another one. Sometimes this just doesn't work out. We promise each other that we will, you know, provide, you know, in our vastly male-dominated society, things are changing.
Yeah.
You know, males promise to, you know, provide for their female, you know, spouses.
Right.
And sometimes it works out, but sometimes it doesn't. Or sometimes, as we know in marriage counseling, sometimes the woman gets her financial act together and doesn't need the man for the money, and then she has to ask herself, well, what do I need him for then?
Right.
You know, and I got two more. One, another is a sense of deficiency. Sometimes we feel the need for someone else to complete us. We feel incomplete. Sometimes people say, I thought I was born and I didn't get the book on how to do this thing.
That's right.
And so we need someone to complete us. But the truth is, other people, as a rule, don't complete us.
Yeah.
We complete ourselves in relation to one another, of course. That's a longer sentence. But
no,
and then
true.
Finally, I mean, there's more, but one obvious one is wanting to have kids. You know, when the impulse to have children drives obviously some women and men too to get together and form marital relationships or
right.
or just child rearing relationships. And how many kids, the cost of having kids, the benefits of having kids.
Right.
Everything else about having kids, and I have kids, and I can tell you, you know, that
yeah.
That impulse to get together isn't necessarily an impulse to stay together. I
exactly.
Yeah.
And on a
so,
yes, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say this. So these are just some of the things that get us together, and these aren't necessarily the list of reasons why, you know, people come into counseling.
Right.
But it's close to that.
No, exactly. I agree. I think, you know, I was talking a little earlier that, you know, the common things are the money issues and, you know, the work issues and, the children, like you mentioned, and the little goofy things like housework, which really seem gigantic when we're in a relationship. Sexual stuff, you know, we have
uh-huh.
problems. We can't express ourselves appropriately about what we need from that other partner because we don't want to hurt their feelings. And we're not comfortable talking about things or showing them, that kind of thing. When you
yeah,
were...
we get messages sometimes that some,
yeah.
that some not just specific things are not okay, but
yeah.
even the intimacy itself. Get messages that it's not desired or preferred or not now, and you know, that's just the sexual side. But there's the money side too. There's
yeah.
not enough money, or some people have lots of money but they still find they're not happy, of course.
Exactly.
And then many people who have lots of money don't have any time, so you make the compromise there.
Right.
Also just sense of greed and selfishness, don't you think? That you know, sometimes some member couple will just assert themselves and their needs so much so that the other person feels like a shadow.
No, exactly. Exactly. You know, it's a give and take thing. And sometimes there usually is a more dominant person in the relationship and there's a, you know, a unspoken agreement about that. But I think you're right. I think it's really important to be able to give and take, you know, that kind of thing. We were also talking, you know, about the couples who have, you know, the imbalance and the money thing. And, you know, that's another thing that has to do with power in a way. You know, whoever's
well, yeah,
providing the
I
money.
I didn't even write this down in my notes, of course, and I didn't even consider power itself. It's a major factor.
Yeah.
How we distribute power in our society, how we do it within families.
Yeah.
And then how we do it in the intimacy of individual relationships.
Right. And that goes to another issue as well that, you know, what you were talking about, the other person is there to complete us. Well, what I tell people who've had unsuccessful relationships in the past, no matter what their age is, or if they're just starting out, they're young adults, and they're saying, how can I get a really nice guy? Or how can I find a nice lady? You've got to get yourself together and know who you are, of course. And this is a no-brainer. But truly, you have to be able to know who you are and be okay about you so you can be okay about somebody else. Because if you, you know, you rely on someone to fill you up, because, you know, whatever issues you have not resolved growing up, it's not going to work unless that somebody else is, like you said, maybe a total power freak or something, and they're going to just take over and run your life for you. And then you're going to have real problems and resentment.
Yeah, you know, people end up making sort of agreements, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
You know, deals or compromises or whatever it is, the setup, the deal. You know, in terms of getting relationships going, they have sort of unspoken, sometimes spoken, but often unspoken rules about, you know, about what they're willing to have or what they must have from the other person. And of course, it's hard to even enter a relationship if you don't have enough, you know, sense of identity for one and valuing yourself that you know you have something to offer. You know, I've rarely found anyone that I would, you know, sort of agree that, oh, you don't have much to offer in a relationship.
Right.
Now, I can't say that I haven't found anyone that, but because I have. There are some people that just really need to work on themselves.
Yeah.
To have something to offer. It's interesting. What am I talking about even? Well, it's like you need to work on yourself to get a job so you can take care of somebody financially. I mean, yeah, that's a viable thing sometimes, but, you know, just having an abiding enough sense of one's own value as a person is a profound thing to offer to a relationship.
Exactly. And, you know, we're going to attract the kind of people who we project to. Whatever we project about ourselves, we're going to attract those kind of people. So if we need somebody, you know, if we have the low self-esteem, we have issues going on within us, and we need somebody to take care of us, and I'm not talking about women necessarily. I'm talking about guys, too. But, again,
both ways, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there, you know, sometimes the specifics of what needs to be taken care of can vary sort of in the
yeah.
gender way sometimes, but it goes across the board. It really does.
Yeah.
You know, males need it and desire it, crave it, basically, you know, demand it, and as do women. Yeah.
Exactly. No, exactly. So I agree. It's just so interesting because everybody's different. Everybody's got their own set of problems. But there's many times the general themes that, like we were just discussing, that come into play. But the thing about you is that you have these formulas. But they're not set in stone. But you have these formulas that you work with that, you know, in steps to kind of help people through their stuff. So you know, no matter what their issues are, no matter – they're coming in – to you, and you're saying, okay, here's what we're going to do. So when you counsel couples in trouble, what are some of the ways that you counsel them? I mean, what are some of the basics that you can give? So maybe people out there listening can say, oh, maybe I should be ready for this, or maybe I should think about these kinds of things before going in for counseling.
Well, you know, I gave a lot of thought to this, and you know, and my initial studies were in, you know, marriage and family therapy to begin with, and I tried to think what's the simplest, you say, formula, the simplest ways of reducing the whole thing of marriage, you know, relationship difficulty. You can call it couples. It's relationship difficulty, and how do we look at? Well, in order for a relationship to work at all, there has to be an understanding about what the relationship is and what it needs, and the people have to both, you know, yield to that and give to that. Of course, we could call that in the broadest terms one's agreements.
Right.
I guess
right.
There's a book with a title like that, which I can't say that I've read, but I've heard it's very good. That,
right, right.
You know, the four agreements, right? And of course, that's a obviously it's a good note to begin with. What are our agreements?
Right.
You know, and of course, there's two kinds of agreements, more or less. Those that are explicit and those that are implicit.
Mm-hmm.
When you come to counseling, what we try to do is we try to make the implicit agreements explicit so that we can then look at them and say, do these look okay to you?
Yes. Yeah, so what
and
do you mean?
Keep in mind that agreements that we make early in a relationship may not even be workable later on in a relationship. You would think, oh, yeah, I made these vows, and I'm going to keep them
all
stuff like that. I think some vows are really worth keeping, of course.
And
must be kept. But I'm just saying, of all of the expectations couples have, as each individual grows and matures and has somewhat different life experiences, their needs shift. As they live and grow together,
they understand
each other differently.
Absolutely.
And those agreements need to be refashioned periodically to date. You know,
so,
I'm not saying that the United States needs a new constitution, but I'm saying that couples need to have ways that they can understand their present state of the art of who they are.
Yeah.
How do they proceed going forward?
Well,
this
I think
even couples that are fairly healthy.
Exactly. And something that I think a lot of people don't understand is always expect change. That's one of the things you can always expect is change. You've got to roll with things going on, no matter what it is. Your job, economy, you know, physiological issues we go through. We go through moodiness. We have stuff. We have to roll with it. Our kids are changing. If we have kids, they're growing up or they're, you know, it's just all, there is change. And the better equipped we are to deal with that stuff, the better off we're going to be. And I just wanted to ask you really quickly. You said implicit as opposed to explicit agreements. What do you mean by implicit agreements? What's that about?
Oh, you know, I remember attending a seminar, and the leader talked about a couple he had come. In the couple's therapy, the husband yells out, "And I'm sick and tired of eating broccoli. Why do you serve me broccoli?" And dumbfounded, the wife turns to him and the therapist and says, "Well, every time we go to your mother's house, she serves you broccoli, and you have seconds." Now, what was never stated is that the guy always hated broccoli. He ate his mother's broccoli because he didn't want to offend his mother. His wife, not knowing that, thought he liked broccoli and served it to him all the time. You know, I mean, that's implicit times two.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, as a parenthetical, I like broccoli, but so I'm not trying to knock broccoli.
I think you need to be. I think, Alan, you know, I think you need to be more politically correct about your vegetables. I really do.
Yeah, right.
You know, you're.
I'm moving towards, asparagus and, you know.
I understand. That's very bold of you.
Zucchini squash is another thing I often recommend to couples.
There you go. Oh, yeah.
You know, if you see something like that where the
are you Dr. Ruth? Are you talking about Dr. Ruth stuff? Okay, go ahead. Just checking.
I'm going to have to change my whole MO now. To I know. Become the fruits and vegetables doctor.
That's
you know?
Right. Go into the produce section, and you pick up a nice round cucumber. I'm sorry. I just couldn't resist it.
Yeah, how do you live a productive life, basically?
Exactly.
How you say that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Produce.
So the implicit...
People come to me, actually, you know, before they marry, and some couples come to me, they're in a relationship, and they haven't discussed whether they're going to marry or not, but they still want to, they have issues, and they see if, can they go forward?
Right.
And the issue isn't always somebody had an affair. You know, it happens sometimes, but the issues have to do with a lot of other things, like you've mentioned, you know, time and work commitments, money issues and stress. We didn't even mention this, but how people, you know, get into debt and use credit cards and everything else.
Right.
I mean, we could do a whole show on that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in the various aspects of power and greed and selfishness, or even how they use leisure time.
Exactly.
You know, some people want to travel. Some people like to stay home. And early in a relationship, couples are more likely to want to, you know, to share, be generous with those sort of things. So one might, you know, feel very comfortable going places, going out to eat a lot. The other one says, great, I'm going to have a lifestyle of going out to eat.
Right. So your first...
So what happens, the explicit becomes when you finally, you know, confide one another that I really like this. This is a part of, you know, what I like about myself or what I like to do. Or I like this about you, and this is, you know, and the other person, of course, would say, yeah, this is who I really am.
Exactly.
And sometimes you can make a list of these things, too, which is nice.
I think it's a good idea. I always encourage people to make lists because it just, you know, kind of, it's a reminder, you know, keeps these things in their brains because we so easily forget.
It's with that poem, How I Love Thee, Let Me Count the Ways.
Yeah.
You know, write it out.
Exactly. Write it out, baby, and say it as much as you can.
By jumping the gun. But gay and lesbian and otherwise in my practice, too. And, of course, people often defy the stereotypes that we put upon them.
Yeah, that's really true. Exactly.
And that's called individuality.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, and so we have to honor individuality, not only in counseling, but in our relationships, too. And how we do that, of course, is we put the person does and what they seem to like to do, and we sometimes ask them about it.
Right,
and when they say they like something, we make a note of it. That's how you surprise your partner when you buy them a gift. You pay attention to where their eyes are looking so that you know what to buy for them.
No, that's really true. What I like to do is take a quick break right now. And can you come on back and finish what we're talking about in terms of how to help couples get their act together? And
yes, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. I like to do that. I just like to take a quick break right now. And what we're going to be coming up with is Dr. Alan Comeau is going to share with us his secrets to helping people. Now, we've already talked about some of the stuff that he does. You know, he puts both parties on notice that a significant change must take place because he's hearing what they're talking about. He's going, what are you talking about? You guys really need to change right here and now and renegotiate the emotional terms of endearment, as he says. So coming up in just a little bit, we're going to find out his second and third steps to getting couples back on track. And that is so important because that's what you need to do. It's like starting off again. It's just like starting off, like little children, you know, getting things going and, you know, all and living in Los Angeles, high atop, where are we? Oh, we're on 5th Street. That's right. I don't know where I'm at. That's why I studied psychology. This is Dr. Michelle, and we're on the couch. Yeah, we are. Every Friday morning and also rerun on Saturdays at 11 a.m. as well. And February 29th, Friday, Pacific Standard Time. It's about 20 minutes to the noon hour. And we have as our special talk show guest today is Dr. Alan Comeau, psychologist, UCLA Medical School clinical faculty member. Sorry, did I blast you out with that music? Are you there, Alan?
Oh, that was fine.
Sorry. I really blasted that music. That was wiping me out.
I like that. You've got your theme song and everything going.
There you go, honey. That's my theme. I'm alive. That's what I'm thankful for. I wake up every morning. That's my therapy. Thank you, God, for another day. Just give me my caffeine.
That plus caffeine will really do it to you. Yeah.
Good to go. All right. Alan, by the way, is also a newspaper columnist and a singer-songwriter. Hey, Alan, let's give the folks out there your website so that if they need to check out and see who you are. And or if you are so bold to let someone contact you, maybe we can give your email address as well. So?
Well, actually, you can reach it through there. One is I have two addresses. One, my main web address for my, which has a lot of my columns put up there, my newspaper columns, about, I guess, 60 or so. I'm compiling them into a book, which I am in the midst of finishing and all the other projects I'm doing. But my address is drcomeau, no period after the R, .com. So drcomeau.com is my web address. And you can just look me up by Alan, A-L-L-A-N, and spell out my last name and in one of your favorite search engines. And I seem to have a lot of hits there, so you can find it.
Well, you have a lot of great advice. I mean, like we were talking about, you've been doing this close to 30 years. Even though you are a young guy.
I stopped counting after 30 years.
Right. Exactly. But no, you have just, he has a successful practice here in Los Angeles. Top notch. Really, you know, helps a lot of people. And today we're talking about counseling couples in trouble. And we, you know, the first thing you were to, I ask you what maybe your first initial, you know, in the initial visits, what you do for couples. And you said basically that you put both parties on notice that a significant change has to take place if this relationship is going to be saved. Do you find that, you know, what happens a lot of times is many couples come in almost a little bit too late to get help? I mean, boy, by the time they come in for therapy, they've been holding out a little too long. That relationship's pretty thrashed. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that's, it's, I don't know if it's a human trait or where it came from, but,
yeah.
You know, I mean, that we all do this. But, you know, we often don't do things we need to do until it's the last minute.
Yep.
And, you know, couples in trouble, you know, will come in. The extreme, a couple comes in sometimes and you find this out midway through the half a dozen visits that you end up having, that one of the members is there just so that they can say, we tried counseling, and then they can leave the relationship.
Right, right.
And so that's a real example of that's past too late. It's almost, you know, it's kind of disingenuous even to do it that way.
Right.
Couples come in. You know, it's like if it hurts, they don't come in. If it's scratched, they don't come in. But they come in when it's bleeding.
Yeah. You know? Good analogy. Now, I don't know about you, but I've even had couples who've come in, and one of the partners really doesn't want to fix it. They're just coming in to, and they start arguing, and they're angry, and they have, you know, they do outbursts. It's almost like a show in front of me. And so they want me to tell them that they probably should get a divorce and break up because it's so bad. I don't know.
Or
if
they
you,
want.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm done.
Oh, well, or they want you to tell the other one that what they want is okay.
Exactly. They want me to defend.
I could help her get in for that one, you know.
No, it's true. You know, sometimes it's really difficult getting stuck in the middle of, you know, they want you to defend them and their belief systems. And you're going, hey, wait a minute. This is why I'm a mediator. This is what I'm going to do is point out some of the, both of the things that, you know, you guys do that are really unhealthy on each side. Because no one is the good guy and no one is usually the bad guy. We all have problems and we feed off each other and create more conflict, so. Right.
Yeah, once again, it reminds us to reflect back that when there's a problem in a relationship, the third entity is having a problem. Even if one of the two, the couple claims they're not having a problem, there is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily mean it's a clinical problem, but it's a problem. And so what we try to be convinced, first of all, I tell people that, you know, to whatever extent possible, I try not to actually take sides.
Right.
You know, that you're right and you're wrong. You know,
right.
That's fraught with problems, too, that there's a problem because one of you thinks there is, and it's worth working on because one of you thinks there is.
Yes.
And if we can help the one who thinks there's a problem to not think there's a problem, or if we can help the one who doesn't think there's a problem to realize that there is a problem, either way, we can move towards a kind of a win-win, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And what's happening when couples are in the room is that clearly they're not in win-win anymore. They're in either win-lose or the other win-lose, or they're in lose-lose.
Yep.
So we got to help them get to move from that to something that works.
Yep. So the second step you kind of do is try to put in place a set of common goals and promises. I'm kind of just reading from your stuff here. How do you go about doing that?
Well, you know, first of all, you get a lot of ponying up. People have to, you know, accept responsibility, and I would say radically accept, not blame, not guilt, not shame, but, you know, responsibility for their own actions and, you know, for their character. And they have to help each other to overcome a sense of mistruth or fears of betrayal when those issues come up, and they sometimes do in relationships.
Right.
Keep in mind that anything anyone ever promised another person they would do, if they didn't do it, the other person can say, well, you promised, and, you know, are you lying? You know?
Right.
And of course, that seems like a technicality, but that's, you know, we need to be able to get past that impasse.
Yeah.
So that ongoing relationship can happen.
Exactly.
So, you know, and then sometimes there really is hurt caused by another member, you know, by one of the members of the couple. And when there's hurt, there has to be repair.
Right.
You know, there's a split, a splinter in the relationship. We have to repair it. And just saying I'm sorry is, well, it's one, necessary, but two, not enough in and of itself. Because in order to repair an injury in a relationship, you not only have to say you're sorry, but then you have to make the corrective behavioral change.
Right, right.
You've got to act differently going toward the future. Or sometimes you have to make restoration to the person for whatever it is, emotionally or even physically, you know, that is at stake.
Right, right.
So then we get to the common goals from that point.
One is
the common goals are sort of built around these other issues, that we both accept responsibility that we have to work on these things without inducing guilt, shame, or blame. That's one of my favorite phrases, guilt, shame, and blame.
Yeah.
And we need to do so with an open mind and an open heart to realize that, you know, we come to relationship, you know, full of imperfection. You know, that this may be off subject a little bit, but I remind people that their eyes are designed designed meaning that's how the eyes work, that there's a part of your eye that's hooked up directly to your brain, the optical center of your brain. And that part of your eye can't see.
Right. Right.
It can't see. It's called, you know, and so what happens is I remind people that there's many, many examples of things like that just built into the way we are.
Right.
You know, we can only see certain visual wavelengths of visual light and hear certain wavelengths of sound.
Right.
And
right.
I bring this up because we have to understand that when, you know, the norms of being perfect are, we throw them out the window.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Can we get along is the point. Can we grow together? That's
exactly
the point. Can we love and encourage each other past obstacles? That's the point. Nobody's perfect. And nobody sees the whole truth. Nobody hears the whole truth because you don't see everything and you don't hear everything.
No, exactly. No, that's exactly. I mean, there's always going to be difficulties in that matter. So, I mean, and you tell people that when they come in. I mean, you let them know these things and say, guys, come on now. There's always going to be things that we don't see or know.
Exactly. Yeah. So when we have these things in place, then what happens is hopefully a certain amount of humility and maybe gratitude kick in at the same time, and toward each other, not just towards me.
Right.
And then people start. Then we ask them to, well, what do we want to do? How are we going to work on? What's our goal of the week? And a lot of times, you know, when you're doing behavioral change, you know, therapy, I'm sure we'll discuss this with many experts.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, you want to have a baseline. You want to say, well, how often does this happen? Oh,
exactly.
What's the big thing that we count? Well, how often do you, you know, have sexual intimacy? Well, invariably, one will say, well, twice a week, and another one will say every other week. You know?
Right, right. Wasn't that taken, that first scene in Annie Hall? Remember that? Right, Woody Allen and Diane are sitting there in the therapist's office, and what happens is the therapist says, how many times a week do you have sex? And she says, all the time. Oh, my God. All the time. Constantly. Twice a week. And he says, and Woody Allen says, "How? Never. We have sex five times a week." You know, so, I mean, no, that's true. That's really...
Well, it's funny because, you know, psychoanalyze that whole point there is that it feels like all the time. It feels like not enough.
Exactly.
And because, you know, there's two ways to measure almost anything, so to speak. One is the objective actual count. If an anthropologist somehow could be, you know, live in the home and track, or if this was a reality TV show,
right,
you know, in some way, you know,
exactly.
It's rated, I guess.
No.
You know, you could actually count the number, but even if you counted the number, one would answer it one way and the other would answer it the other way. But we need to have a count though, nonetheless, so we can be, you know, of some things when it has to do with incidence of things.
Right, right, exactly.
It has to do with how people treat each other. For example, you know, you could institute with a couple that, you know, that every day they will, you know, have a hug, or every day they will kiss goodbye, or every day when the second one gets home,
right.
they will do something, you know?
Right, right. What's that study that came out that says something about if you can come home with your partner every day, no matter what time you get home from work, and you can have a 30-second hug, not try to pull away, got to do this, got to eat, got to watch my show, got to whatever, that 30-second hug significantly kind of slows all those autonomic nervous systems. You take the time. You're
right.
not patting the other person on the back in that nervous pat. You're
right.
totally full bear hugging and the heck with everything else. You know, so that's a good thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well,
I'm just rudely interrupting.
We've seen a lot of times of basic things like in your training in neurosciences, you know, as in mind, we realize that, you know, we take for granted a lot of things in the world that they're there. But, for example, I don't take for granted the brain. In my head, or in yours, or anyone else's. So I started asking myself, well, how is this brain functioning? What's it doing?
Exactly.
When you hug somebody, and when it's a mutually desired hug, you get to reset. You get to resonate and vibrate with the other person just for a moment, provided that you give it up and really give the hug.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
This is an important thing for relationships because relationships, you know, function like on vibration, on the love vibration, as it were. So that 30-second hug resets, you know, can help to reset. I've known couples where someone would come home after a long, really arduous day of work.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I believe that. And the spouse, this time it's a guy, comes home and he just goes into the TV room, turns on the sports channel.
Yep.
No hugs for the wife.
Mm-hmm.
He's waiting for dinner to show up, I guess.
There you go.
Magically, of course.
Yeah, it's
And you know, in the course of this, and he was talking about how stressed he was. He just couldn't. You know, go into the intimacy, the conversation, the need for attention.
Right.
And, you know, and we have to work really hard on getting him to make the transition from work consciousness to home consciousness.
Exactly.
It's not the same thing. You don't want to have the same consciousness. Well, some people do, you know, if you're in consciousness and it's stressful and you have to deal with threats all the time or some other kind of thing, and then you go home, you know, you gotta take your holster off, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, and kick out your boots and you're in there and be home.
Exactly.
And relax together.
And I think a lot more women are getting that thing about, how men really actually do. I hear a lot of women, in my practice, complaining about he zones out and he goes into computer time and sports on TV time and even online games or you know, the husband with the Xbox or whatever, they go into these games and they just zone out. I think a lot of women get that men do need that zone downtime to just kind of come down.
Well, you know, what happens, of course, is that these games themselves have, I say, addictive properties.
Right.
You know, they reward the pleasure center of the brain, and they turn on the autonomic nervous system in a kind of arousal, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
That is itself in some ways pleasurable. A little bit of testosterone or adrenaline is a good feeling for some people, for guys anyway.
Exactly.
But you know what? I've seen women go on the computer and just stay there and and the guy's saying, "Hey, you want to have dinner together?" No, I'm doing this. You know, online thing, you know, what happens is there are smart people, women, no doubt, have evolved, you know, computer programs that are relational in nature.
Yeah, exactly.
So that you can go online and have virtual friends.
Right.
Virtual relationships.
Right,
virtual romances. And I'm not even talking about the stuff that people, you know, where you can have, like,
conversations
and have, you know, internet affairs. I'm not talking about, like, even in fantasy.
I know. That just, I mean, boy, you got to be really hurting in a relationship to go online and get a fantasy playtime pal or sexual partner or coupling partner, or you've got to really be a lonely person to do that. And
well,
I get that.
It's no question to me. And when I treat those couples, I get it that each of them is trying to meet a need. There is a loneliness factor. There is, you know, when he's home, he doesn't do this, it's not limited to gender. And so what we need to take a look at is, again, we need to say, well, what are your needs and what are your commitments towards meeting each other's needs?
Exactly.
And I remind people that, you know, you have to be as committed that your partner has their needs met as you are committed you have your needs met. Or, you know, 51-49. But there has to be a strong commitment that the other person has an opportunity for fulfillment. Now, keep in mind also this. We know this from a lot of work with a lot of people and observations in the world that, you know, not everyone in the world is seeking, personal actualization and yeah. growing. Some people are just trying to get through the day.
That's right. But,
you know, some people are in survival mode most of the time.
Yep.
These people, you know, it's what an additional difficulty it would be for those people to, get out of the workplace, get home, and then, you know, are they still in survival mode, or can they sort of be in mutuality mode?
Right.
Can they enjoy the now? You know, right. We didn't even mention the now yet, but
yeah, exactly.
Can they enjoy the moment of just being together?
Yeah.
You know, I do this with almost everyone that comes to the office. I say, you know, breathe in, breathe out, you know, and make it really count.
Mm-hmm. Spend that
downtime. Couples need to be able to do that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think with everything at our fingertips, you know, we have everything we need, bada boom, bada bing. You know, we have our Blackberries we carry around. We have our computers that we need to connect with other people, and we have our cell phones. We're constantly going, and, you know, wherever we go to work, whatever we do, or whatever we're doing at home, it's so immediate gratification oriented, and we, you know, we don't take time, and I'm not talking about with our couple, I'm talking about out there in the world when we're away from our couples. When we finally get together in the evening or whatever our hours are that we can, maybe even weekends, some people don't get to spend time together because one's going to bed early and the other, you know, whatever.
That happens.
Exactly. That downtime for the weekends, you actually, you know, you are so right, Alan, because we actually do have to take time to breathe and change our pattern. We have to flip that light switch off. And knock our, you know, bodies into down mode. Turn off the BlackBerry. Turn off the computer. Just get away from it. Turn off that cell phone and just be together. Take a walk together.
That's good just hearing you say it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Take a walk. Just chill out. You know, do whatever you can do together. And that's a really important thing. So, I don't want to, you know, we're running out of time, as always, because there's so much fun stuff to talk about. But just to reiterate, I think, let me just share with you guys again, we're talking to Dr. Alan Comeau. He's a psychologist here in Los Angeles, one of the best folks, and you can find him at drcomeau.com. That's his website. It's drcomeau.com. You can find out all about him. He's a musician, by the way, too. He's got an album, a CD out. It's called Life Is in Session, which is very significant. Life Is in Session. Your songs are wonderful, by the way. He's a fabulous songwriter, singer. See, I'm going to be your PR woman, okay?
Hey,
I want 15%, baby. No.
That's right. I'll give you a percent.
Yeah. I'll give you a percent of this, baby.
A percent of nothing is nothing, but a percent of something is something. It's worth noting.
That's exactly right. So you can contact Dr. Alan Comeau, who is also a relationship expert. And as you've heard, if you've been listening, has seen hundreds of couples for over 30 years. He stopped counting after 30 years, how long he's been doing it. But, you know, darling, you look marvelous. You're very young.
Thank you.
Very youthful, young, hip, and happening. Psychologist here again in Los Angeles. Anything else you want to put out there so folks can find you or contact you?
Well, you know, two things I want to add is that you got to have every relationship can be intentional as opposed to accidental.
Right.
Make your relationship conscious and intentional and work on it every day in some way. You know, it's just really important for people to take care of themselves, to take care of each other.
Exactly.
We need more caring in this world. We don't need more money.
Right.
Well, we need more money, but we need more caring, you know, and we need people to make a difference, you know, to let the driver get into the lane that needs to get in there and say, have a good day.
Exactly.
And we need to hold the doors open for our, you know, for our friends and our spouses and our relationship friends.
Right.
You know, we can treat each other a whole lot better. And if we do, we're going to go to sleep like little, you know, kittens and, you know, at nighttime.
I love that. I love your analogy. Well, Dr. Alan Comeau, psychologist here in Los Angeles, thank you so much for calling in on the couch here with Dr. Michelle. And would you come back again soon and be another?
It's such a pleasure to talk with you.
Oh, you too, sweetheart. All right. Have a great day, everybody out there. And this is Dr. Michelle again. And we're on the couch. We're having a good time. And I will be back, as I usually am, every Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning. We're doing it for with your issues, no matter what it is. Self-esteem, anxiety, give me your biggest hits. Depression, yeah. Relationship, come on. And you can contact me, by the way, at drmichelletherapy.com. drmichelletherapy.com. Come on down. I'd love to hear from you. Have a wonderful day, and I'll be back tomorrow at 11 in the morning.